Case number 32 in the Hekigan Roku. Elder Ding stands still. The case reads, Elder Ding asked Lin Ji, what is the essential point of Buddhism? Lin Ji, getting up from his seat, seized him, slapped him, and pushed him away. Ding stood motionless. A monk standing nearby said, Elder Ding, why don't you bow? Just as Ding bowed, he suddenly became enlightened. Lin Ji's Japanese name is Rinzai. His birth date is unknown, but his death is believed to have been approximately 867 in the Common Era. He was in his mid-50s. Lin Ji was the most prominent successor of Wang Bo. He is yet another seeker who, born in the north, traveled south to find a Zen teacher. He eventually received transmission from Wang Bo, but also studied with Gao An and De Shan, and in his later travels met and had exchanges with Gui Shan and Yang Shan. And as we know, his name continues as one of the three surviving houses of Zen, along with the Soto and Obaku schools. Here's a comment from The Roaring Stream by Nelson Foster and Jack Shoemaker. Just as De Shan is known for his blows and Zhao Zhou for his simple eloquence, Lin Ji Yi Xuan is known for his shout, a roar sounding something like HUST! That he issued as a presentation of Buddha nature. While each of these reputations is deserved to a degree, they are grossly reductionistic. Lin Ji's bellow was no more than a small part of his rich, inventive, and highly effective teaching. His lively and extensive discourse record undercuts the popular image of him as a sort of Dharma thug, displaying his mastery of Mahayana sutras and his creativity in utilizing and interpreting them. He did shout at, beat, and berate his students, but he also originated some of the most sophisticated, even lovely expressions of the fundamental matter ever to appear in Chan. And it was all to the same end, to introduce us to, as he put it, the true person of no rank who is continually going in and out of the gateways of your face. One could also add here that his monks recognized this and loved him deeply for his passion and his compassion in teaching the Dharma. After Lin Ji settled down at a small temple near the city of Zhao Zhou, the monk who became known as Zhao Zhou paid him a visit. Again from the Roaring Stream. Lin Ji's record says he was washing his feet when his visitor arrived, but Zhao Zhou put his question anyway, inquiring, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from India? I happen to be washing my feet just now, Lin Ji replied. Zhao Zhou came closer and made as if listening intently. In that case, I'll ladle out another dipper of dirty water, exclaimed Lin Ji. Zhao Zhou promptly took leave. Elder Ding asked Lin Ji, what is the essential point of Buddhism? Lin Ji, getting up from his seat, seized him, slapped him, and pushed him away. Ding stood motionless. A monk standing nearby said, "Elder Ding, why don't you bow?" Just as Ding bowed, he suddenly became enlightened. What is the essential point of Buddhism? Elder Ding is no beginner. He has been practicing earnestly for a very long time. He is the head monk, one of Lin Ji's most senior students. And yet, he must ask this question. When someone like that asks, "What is Buddha?" or "What is the essential point?" it is not a casual question, nor is it asked as a beginner would ask. Nor is it a challenge to test the master. Elder Ding is asking the question from a depth that is unimaginable. In fact, it is not really being asked by Ding the person. This question arises from somewhere that is beyond any individual person or personality. In fact, this entire koan arises from somewhere no human being has ever gone or will go. It is a place where only Buddhas dwell. In recent times at this center, it doesn't seem to me that we have talked much about samadhi, not specifically. We deal a lot with shila, i.e. virtue, the precepts and the accomplishment of character. We also deal a lot with prajna, transcendent wisdom, the deep understanding of the fundamental empty nature of things. But lately, samadhi tends not to get much attention. And yet, it is co-equal with the other two legs of our Buddhist tripod of practice. It is said that one who develops great wisdom only is like a man who sees but cannot walk far. One who develops great samadhi power only is like one with great stamina, but who is blind. Maybe it's just me, but until I started working on this talk, I hadn't thought much about samadhi for quite a while either. Of course, thoughts about samadhi are not samadhi, any more than the word cow in any way resembles a cow. Samadhi is something that just happens in our zazen. As we sit and engage the practice, the mind becomes quiet, and we enter into a samadhi of one sort or another. So maybe it's okay not to discuss it at great length very often, but let's not take it for granted either. Samadhi, or right concentration, is one of the spokes of the Eightfold Path. So in talking about samadhi, I will liberally rip off Katsuki Sekida, the lay teacher who spent several years in Hawaii. Let me summarize his take on Master Lin Ji's admittedly artificial classifications of samadhi. Lin Ji said, "Sometimes I take away the person and leave the environment. Sometimes I take away the environment and leave the person. Sometimes I take away both the person and the environment. Sometimes I leave both the person and the environment." Sometimes I take away the person and leave the environment. Person gone, environment still there. We have all had the experience of being so engrossed in an activity that the person disappears. Ideally, it happens in mindfulness practice, such as Samu, where there is just the vacuuming or just washing the dishes. An accomplished musician plays his or her instrument and disappears. But the dishes, the vacuum cleaner, or the violin and the music are still there. There is environment and awareness of environment. This is the samadhi of activity in the world. The self is forgotten in the midst of activity. Now, it can also happen that a person becomes so engrossed in a football game that he misses dinner. Or think of a teenager reading a science fiction novel. You could set a bomb off under his chair and he wouldn't notice it. That's a samadhi of sorts, but it is not practice. Samadhi is not some kind of blind or deaf condition where one is oblivious. Sekida emphasizes another important aspect of samadhi, and that is self-mastery. When the bell rings to end the round, we get up. When the morning block ends, we go to Orioki. How different that is from someone helpless in a trance before the television screen. Sometimes I take away the environment and leave the person. Environment gone, person still there. This is why we come to Sesshin. We come to turn inward. We withdraw from the world, the environment, and immerse ourselves in Mu, or the counting, or the breath, or the nub of the koan, to the exclusion of all else, to the point where everything disappears, and there is only Mu, or the breath, and the sitting. And yet there is still in most of us an awareness of sorts, an awareness of practice and of somewhere, something doing the practice. Sometimes I take away both the person and the environment. Person and environment, both gone. This is the eighth ox herding picture. There is nothing. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no color, sound, smell, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of. There is nothing to take hold of and no one to do it. If one enters such a state, it cannot even be called a state. It is only later, when the mind again becomes active, that one looks back and say, "Phew, that was freaky." But the actual event you will not remember because there was no you. Nothing moves, not even the awareness that nothing moves. It has been called the Great Death. Sometimes I leave both the person and the environment. This is the tenth ox herding picture. Entering the marketplace with bliss bestowing hands. This is the mature practitioner. It is Deshan carrying his bowls, or Zhao Zhou, at the age of 119. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Here we can no longer speak of samadhi, practice, Buddhism, or any other fixed concept. Everything has been swallowed up, and what now appears is the true person of no rank, the one who helps anyone, regardless of rank or station, in the same way a tree gives shade or a cloud gives rain. Another way to put it would be, transcending profane and holy, I liberate myself and others. Strictly speaking, however, everything is in samadhi every moment. Zafus are in zafu samadhi. The carpet is in carpet samadhi. Each breath is in breath samadhi. Case 50 in the Hekigan Roku. A monk asked Umon, "What is the samadhi that leaves no traces?" Another translation of the monk's question is, "What is every atom samadhi?" Umon, or Yunmen, replied, "Rice in the bowl, water in the bucket." The rice in the bowl, the water in the bucket. The paper on the lectern, the speakers on the floor, the chairs against the wall. Every atom is in samadhi every moment. If we all truly believe that in the marrow of our bones and live that realization every moment of our lives, we could close the Zen Center and each of us go on our fully enlightened way. But since that is not the case, we need skillful means to help us in our understanding as we stumble along. Having said all this, I have to be careful here. All these states we have described here are temporary conditions, and as such, they are subject to arising and disappearing according to causes and conditions. They come and go like colors on the surface of a lake. Classifying various samadhi conditions is a bit like trying to classify different parts of the sky. It might be useful to help us with an intellectual understanding, but please don't get hung up on distinctions. Don't get caught up in various thoughts about, oh, I've been experiencing a type 1 or type 2 samadhi. The moment you start thinking about practice, you have, of course, lost the practice. Just continue the practice. And whatever happens, happens. Nevertheless, it is in samadhi that we have the great chance to come to awakening. And it is this awakening, this deepest of all experiences, I hate to say Zen experience, that you must demonstrate in Doksan with this and with every koan that you work on. But samadhi by itself is not enlightenment. No mental or physical state, even the most profound, is transcendent. All are temporary. Koans are not about mental states, even the deepest or the most exalted. These again are but means. They are the raft by which we get to the other shore. But once we reach it, don't carry it with you. Furthermore, the noetic experience of practice and realization is also important. To know and to know that you know. A fish is in total fish samadhi, but can you call a fish a fully enlightened being capable of transmitting the Dharma? It is for us humans to struggle, stumble and fall, and pick ourselves up again. Elder Ding asked Lin Ji, "What is the essential point of Buddhism?" Lin Ji, getting up from his seat, seized him, slapped him, and pushed him away. Ding stood motionless. Elder Ding stands still. He stands still. He is still. He is stillness itself. He has just been slapped around by his teacher. How do most of us normally react to such treatment? But this is not a normal situation. Session is not a normal situation. We have been sitting for some days in intense and continuous zazen. Things are very different now. Master Hakuin comments on Elder Ding. He stood there unaffected, as if nothing had happened. Splendid. His state manifested because of the power of stability deriving from long-term practice of meditation. This is where the waves of the ocean of learning evaporate overnight. Let him stand there until tomorrow. Deriving from long-term practice of meditation. Elder Ding was Lin Ji's head monk. He had been with the master for a long time, longer than most. And time is a crucial element here. In order to come to awakening, we have to put in the time on the mat. That's what Sesshin is about. It is about putting in concentrated, continuous zazen for long periods of time, over 7 days. There are no shortcuts. We can't beat ourselves into samadhi, but we can put in the time and the work. As long as we engage the practice sincerely and give it the time, we are doing all we can do. States like samadhi and events like kensho will happen when they happen. But they are beyond understanding. They are the unknown. This is why Robert Aitken Roshi insists that Zen Buddhism is a religion. The ancient mystery religions of Greece and Rome appear in some ways to be very similar to Zen. Here is what a Roman philosopher, Plotinus, writes. As if borne away or possessed by a god, he attains to solitude in untroubled stillness, nowhere deflected in his being, and unbusied with self, utterly at rest, and become very rest. He does not converse with a statue or image, but with Godhead itself. And this is no object of vision, but another mode of seeing, a detachment from self, a simplification and surrender of self. Much of the language here is different, but if one were to substitute Buddha or Buddha nature for some of the theistic terms, it would describe what we call samadhi. Socrates would fall into states of rapture and stare off into space for hours. There are similar accounts of Sri Ramana Maharshi, the modern Hindu mystic. With intense sitting for any length of time, in or out of Sesshin, one may enter a relative samadhi. The thoughts fade down to a very low level, rather like a conversation heard dimly from another room. But still there is some consciousness of sitting there, of a being. But in Sesshin, during yaza, the late night sitting, it is not uncommon to be wandering around the temple and to see something, a light, an altar, a table, and to stand transfixed. Suddenly, there is no reason to move, no reason to think, no reason to be. It might last a few seconds, A half hour? Who knows? Then thoughts and movements return, but the experience is not forgotten. This is what happened to Elder Ding. There's a delightful story about the hermit monk, Ryokan. One day a visitor came to see him, and Ryokan was overjoyed. He loved to have visitors. So he welcomed the visitor with great enthusiasm and said, "Let me go into the village. I'll get some sake, and we can have sake to drink." So off he went. The visitor waited for 15 minutes, half an hour, an hour. Ryokan didn't come back. Finally, he went out to see if anything had happened to his host. And about 20 feet from the hut, there was Ryokan standing looking at the moon. "Isn't it beautiful?" he asked. Then he looked at his guest and said, "Oh, the sake! Wait here, I'll be right back." And off he ran to the village. To enter into samadhi is to tread along the edge of the unknown and the unknowable. And it is at Sesshin that we develop this samadhi to as deep a level as we can through uninterrupted sitting. In his commentary on Mu, Wu Men says that you are like a mute person who has had a dream. You know it for yourself alone. Lin Ji, getting up from his seat, seized him, slapped him, and pushed him away. Ding stood motionless. In Sesshin, we are in a unique place. Just as in a monastery, there is nothing to do here but practice. When one practices long enough and hard enough and persistently enough, the mind becomes still and quiet. The body moves differently, not necessarily faster or slower, but in a very different manner. This is not just psychology. There are profound neurological changes in the brain, chemical changes. But it is not enough. One can spend a long time practicing, entering a deep samadhi again and again, but it is still not enough. The samadhi state in and of itself is not the end or purpose of practice, if practice can be said to have a purpose. In fact, samadhi and the seeking of samadhi for itself alone can become a trap. This is called stagnant water zen, or keeping watch over a corpse in a coffin. It leaves you utterly unprepared to deal with the world of time and space, blood, sweat, and sex, and you will suffer even more from them. But samadhi is preparation. When a sincere practitioner is in such a state, something can happen. A noise like a pebble striking a stalk of bamboo. A train whistle. The sight of flowers blooming. The view from the top of a mountain. Something read in a book. An offhand chance remark in Doksan or a Taisho. Or from a bystander. If the teacher can truly and accurately discern the condition of the student, he or she may give the student a final nudge. And sometimes it works, as in this case. But make no mistake, it is up to the student to do the heavy lifting, to practice hard and correctly for as long as it takes. When it happens, where, under what circumstances, is a matter of karma. A monk standing nearby said, "Elder Ding, why don't you bow?" Who was it that spoke and said this? Who was that monk? Was it another senior student of Lin Ji who saw what was needed? Was it someone who was just getting impatient? Does it matter? The words were spoken. They came into being. In attributing words to someone, we create a self. Was there a self in all of that assembly at that moment? A monk asked Fuketsu, "Both speech and silence transgress. How can we be free and non-transgressing?" Fuketsu, that's Feng Shui, said, "How fondly I remember Konan in March. The partridge chirps among the scented flowers." It is said that Fuketsu was quoting a well-known poet. But was he? Was he quoting words? Was he even there? When the words, "Throughout heaven and earth, I am the only one," were spoken, there was nobody speaking them. If they were spoken by Siddhartha Gautama, they were a lie. Jesus advised his disciples, "When they deliver you up, take no thought how or what you shall speak, for it shall be given you in that same hour what you shall speak." That's very good advice for anybody about to go into Doksan. Just as Ding bowed, he suddenly became enlightened. How many instances are there of people who report coming to awakening, doing some simple action? Suddenly, there was no one washing the dishes or scrubbing the floor or sweeping. There was just the sweeping, the washing, and suddenly it's all so very simple. But Elder Ding is in great danger here. Yes, he's had an experience, but will he profit from it by letting it go and moving along in his practice? Or does he get hung up on it? In a commentary on another koan, Robert Aitken mentions a Christian monk who had a vision of an encounter with the Virgin Mary. He spent the rest of his life drawing his memory of the encounter on the wall of his cell, rubbing it out and drawing it over again. He became stuck in that one experience. As it turned out, Ting did not get stuck. In fact, he went on to become a respected teacher, very much in the rough and tumble tradition of Lin Ji, along with his Dharma brother, Sun Sheng. Elder Ding came to awakening. What does that mean? How does it happen? I have no idea. I know the means by which one does it. We all know that practice done properly for some length of time leads to an awakening experience. But I can also push a button on my computer and it boots up, but I couldn't begin to tell you how. In our sitting, we don't pursue anything. Not enlightenment, not samadhi. All we do is let go. Let go of everything. With every breath, every move, every moment of sitting, everything flows away like water out of a bucket or air out of a collapsing balloon. In our sitting for the remainder of this session, sit. Sit still. Be the stillness. Mu is the stillness. The breath is the stillness. One is the stillness. And in the depths of that stillness, you will ultimately come to the truth that has always been there and always will be. Together with all beings, we realize Buddhahood.